And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everybody! Today is Wednesday, December 13th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. Here with Kevin. Please listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Tell your friends about us. Tell everybody about us. If you ask us a question, we're going to try our best to get back to you. But talk to us. We want to talk to you. Guys, week 14, NFL is over. It's amazing. For only the second time this year, both the Jets and Giants both won in the same weekend. They both moved to 5-8. We're going to get to them. We got a lot of stuff going on. LA had a huge weekend last weekend. Ohtani signs with the Dodgers. The Lakers win the in-season tournament. LeBron takes center stage. Let's get it started with the Jets. After they win 30-6 over Houston, after a 0-0 halftime, Jets come out. Zach Wilson throws for 301 and 2. Houston had only 135 yards of offense. Lost Nico Collins after losing a couple other receivers in Dalen Schultz. Stroud came out of the game with about 6.5 minutes left with an injury. But the Jets come away with the win. Kev, let's start it up.
Who played quarterback in the second half, and what'd you do with Zach Wilson? My goodness, was that – that's what number two pick overall in the draft should look like, shouldn't it? That was by far and away the best game that Zach Wilson has played in his career. Got the ball to his playmakers, got the ball to Garrett. Maybe even forced it to him a couple of times, but that's what you've got to do with Garrett Wilson. Found Conklin a few times, especially early, a little earlier in the game too. I can think of a couple of seam passes that, you know, you've got the linebacker chasing Conklin, throw it over the linebacker's head, right to Conklin's hand. You know, that's a nice 20-25 yard gain. Did a good job of getting the ball, checking down to Breece Hall. He had 9 catches and certainly showed his ability to make some guys miss and pick up some key yardage. You know, the first half was nothing. I thought the Jets played well. You know, they had 2 or 3 drives there that, you know, were positive drives. Flip the field position, never quite got over the hump there. Always had either a sack or a penalty would cost them in the first half. But then they came out in the second half, put together a great drive, forced a punt, another great drive. The only mistake Zach made, he fumbled, which, you know, I think to me, that fumble was more a really good play by the Houston's defense. Sometimes you got to give the other team credit, I think. But the big thing was after 14-6, they came right back down, scored a touchdown, 21-6, and the game was over. It's amazing what this defense can do when they are playing with the lead. It showed. And yes, we know, and the announcers repeated ad nauseum. Yes, they were. Houston was missing some weapons, you know, with Schultz out, losing Nico Collins early. But you know what? We're Jets fans. We've been watching this team ravaged by injuries all year. So I've got no sympathy for anybody who loses players with injuries. But like I said, just played so well in the second half, especially in those conditions, and do enough, as the Jets usually do, just do enough to keep you pulled in and give you a little sense of hope going into Miami this week. Darren?
The rare laugher in the fourth quarter for the Jets. I can count on 2 hands how many times this has happened since 2010. Really, that doesn't happen very often. If it happens once a year, it's a big deal for this team. Zach played well, like you said. The fumble was a hustle play. You know what? He's trying to make a play. He got stripped from behind. You know what? You don't get mad at a player trying to make something happen. Garrett, Breece, Conklin, Ruckert all played well. Lazard had a hold. Outside of that, I didn't notice him the whole game. Get him out of the damn game. Waste of everybody's time. Alan Lazard. They even dusted off Cobb. He caught a touchdown. He caught the first one. He wasn't even supposed to be in on that play. Somehow, some way, he got out there and he scored. I mean, we haven't seen him in weeks. And yeah, they had injuries. I'm not saying that they didn't. But the fact of the matter is, Stroud looked uncomfortable the entire day. They had one drive. That was it. And that was after the fumble. You know, I mean, I know Collins got hurt. I understand that, but injuries are part of the game. This team had NFL players out there, and the Jets shut them down. And again, Stroud didn't even throw for 100 yards in this game, and Wilson threw for 300. What that tells me is that the weather wasn't a factor. That if Wilson could throw it in that weather, Stroud could throw it in that weather. 2 weeks ago, a friend of mine named Gino told me that he'd be shocked, he'd be stunned if the Jets beat the Texans. He said, maybe the Falcons, but not the Texans. 30-6.
Announcement was made with all their offensive weapons, not without three of their four offensive weapons.
Please. You got to be kidding me, Gino. Okay. That's the reason
that's what it was made of.
If everybody played, the Jets would win this game.
If you told me there was no Dallas Schultz and Collins, I never would have picked them. So there it is. You can believe me or not believe me. It's up to you.
No, it's not about that. But every team gets injuries, and I don't want to hear the crying from Texans fans or people that supported the Texans that they didn't have enough players because we've been playing without an offensive line for an entire freaking year. So I don't want to hear it. I'm sorry. Don't want to hear it. This vaunted offensive line that's been so good for you since you five sacks. Five sacks.
I don't care if you want to hear it.
I'm just telling you.
You asked me a question. You are the one that gave you an answer.
You'd be stunned. You'd be shocked.
I would. And I was stunned.
Because you were wrong.
I was stunned. You're right. Would I be stunned? It has nothing to do with right or wrong. You said, would I be stunned? The answer is yes, I was stunned.
You were wrong about how the Jets were going to play in this game. That's what I'm saying.
Right or wrong. You said, would you be stunned? Yes, I'm stunned.
Exactly.
I'm stunned right now. I'm stunned right now that they won the game.
So do you think that your prediction was correct or incorrect?
There was no prediction. You asked
you
if I would
be
stunned
if the Jets won. What does that mean? That means that you don't think that they're going to win.
I am stunned.
Yeah, which means you thought that they were not going to win. And they won. Anyway, Kev,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
And I am stunned that they won. I am stunned that they won.
I was stunned because of 30-6.
Gino, are you stunned or not stunned right now? I am stunned they still won the game.
Even without all those offensive weapons, I'm stunned.
Jack Wilson came out and looked like a quarterback who he hasn't looked like in 2 years. So, yes, I'm stunned. As of this moment, I'm still stunned.
But on the defensive side, we said we could maybe make Stroud look like a rookie. And that's what the Jets defense did. Weapons or no weapons? You know, because Jets have had to deal with this for all year. Last year, you know, I'm sick of hearing about other teams using injuries as an excuse. You know, we made Stroud look like a rookie. And that I'm not stunned about. I'm not shocked. Darren and I both thought would it be enough to win. Yeah.
I'm shocked.
My shot was 30-6. That's what I was shocked by. But the fact that they won the game, no, I'm not shocked.
Before this week, you had 8 losses where you played good defense and still lost. So am I still shocked? Yes, I'm still shocked.
We put up 30 and there were no injuries on the Houston defense. Anyway, back to you, G.
Any other Jet points before we move on?
Listen, you know, they played a complete game. We haven't seen it all year. It means nothing if they don't come back and play well against the Dolphins. Let's be honest. Can't be a one-hit wonder. You got to play 2 weeks in a row like this. If they do that, then you can start to say, hey, listen, maybe this team is not as bad as we thought. Then you sit there and you start kicking yourself about the games that they blew earlier in the year. Okay?
A little preview, you know, you look at, you know, again, with injuries, you know, Miami all of a sudden has lost their starting center. Tyreek Hill, you know, a little shaky there. I know he came back, but it was more of a decoy look to it, I thought. Who knows what his status is going to be for Sunday. You never know.
I agree with that, Jeff. I agree with that. When he came back in the fourth quarter, I thought it was all decoy, so I agree with you.
And he sat out a lot of plays down the stretch.
Yeah. So, to me, losing the center, you have a chance. Maybe Quinnen can have the big game that we've been waiting for him to have. Get that pressure up the middle. Get Tua off his mark. Because if Tua gets off his mark, he doesn't look as comfortable when he's outside the pocket. Yep. Maybe that's just me looking at him, but to me, I never thought Tua had the strongest arm. And if you get him moving around a little bit, that takes away some of the arm strength. And if you have Hill, even a little hobbled, you know, you've lost a couple of weapons. The one thing that concerns me looking into this game, surprisingly, and again, maybe the center being out helps, but the thing that concerns me more is the run defense. We've been lacking in run defense, I think, since Al Woods went out.
Yep.
And we need to make sure we shore that up because they will run Mostert and Achan at us whole game if they need to.
Well, here's the beauty about their run game, though. They're going to run wide, and they're going to keep running wide. They're going to play, which is a benefit to us with Mosley and Williams' speed. They're not a physical run up the gut team. Not to say that they can't. When they do that, though, usually Ingold's in the game, and he's lead blocking, and that's a big part of it. The other thing is, I'm going to save my comment about the Dolphins until we get to their game. So that's fine.
We'll get there in a couple minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm going to save it.
All right. The other New York team, the Giants, came up with a 24-22 win on Monday night. They moved to 5-8. Green Bay moves to 6-7. Tommy DeVito led a clutch drive, which led to Bullock's 37-yard winning field goal. Giants get the win. DeVito threw for 158 and one. He ran 10 times for 71. Barkley had 86 yards and two touchdowns. Listen, it was an unpretty game, but it's a victory. The five turnovers in the game, Green Bay had three, the Giants had two. Darren?
Well, I mean, this game was really interesting. There was a play early on where they stopped Green Bay on a third and one, turned to a fourth and one. They overturned it, and I can't see how they overturned the call, but they did. Green Bay came down and scored a touchdown. DeVito led him right down the field and matched him. I thought it was really impressive that he got points right away on that drive. Here's the thing. Tommy Cutlets, nice comeback. The Giants were in control of this game. Then Saquon, trips over his own 2 feet after almost getting tripped up, fumbles the ball. Green Bay picks it up. Love, who did not have a great game, leads his team down. Great play at the end for a touchdown to put Green Bay up. And then Cutlets comes back down and leads them down for the winning field goal. You had to like what you saw. The agent looks like he's at a central casting for any Goomba movie you've ever seen in your life. It's almost borderline embarrassing as an Italian to watch this idiot out there. But the family's lovable. They have big tailgates, all the Italian food and everything like that. You got to like it. Saquon played fine, except for the fumble. Wandale Robinson seemed like he was open all night long. Okereke seems like he's really become that stalwart. They haven't had an inside linebacker like this since Aaron Pierce. This is the best that I've seen the Giants have. He's all over the place. I thought that this team showed a lot of moxie. The one thing I'll say, Daniel Jones never won a primetime game. In fact, the Giants get blown out every time they play primetime, and they were like 0-8 or 0-9. And this kid came out. I know Green Bay's not a super team, but he came out and beat a playoff caliber team on a primetime night. I was pretty impressed with the way they played. Now, talk about the Jets and the Giants together. Both Tommy Cutlets and Zach both win Offensive Player of the Week. I mean, you know, listen, I like what Tommy Cutlets did. He threw for 158 yards. They basically just wanted to give him the damn award. Purdy threw for 370. Debo caught for 150. McCaffrey rushed for 140. I mean, you know, this is just like giving him an award for the sake of the award. That's fine. I'm happy he won it. Zach's 301. Maybe he was the best in the AFC. Flacco had a little bit of a bigger day. You know, you can go either way there. But, you know, the Giants are playing hard right now. Again, they play well against mediocre teams. And when they play a good team, you want to see what this team can do. Now people are saying, oh, the Jets should trade a number two for Tommy DeVito. No, we haven't seen this guy play against a good defense. He's beaten the Patriots. He beat Washington. And now he beat Green Bay in an impressive game. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But, you know, this guy basically, to me, has now proved that he can be a backup in the league for 10 years. That's really what he's shown. If he emerges, you know, even more, even better. But he has yet to throw for 200 yards in a game. So before we get that whole, this kid should be a starter in the league, you know, let's take a break. G, or Kev?
Yeah.
Kev?
Yeah, with DeVito, you know, only 4 incompletions. He was 17 for 21. Made no mistakes, no turnovers by him, you know, no interceptions. He hasn't thrown a pick in 3 or 4 weeks now. Showed a good ability to scramble. And like Darren said, has shown that he's at least a competent NFL quarterback. And looks like he could at least have a career as a backup. Once you get some tape on him, I mean, it's been 3 weeks. We saw, you know, Mike White 2 years ago set the world on fire, throwing 300 yards plus, and where is he now backing up Tua? So,
to your point, Kev, and I agree with you, but to your point, you know, it was Washington, New England, Green Bay.
Yeah.
Exactly what you said about Mike White. I think that's great, you know, great point. Let's see what he does the rest of the way now. He's got, you know, the Giants actually this week, they're going to New Orleans. They have the Saints this week. Then they got Philly, the Rams, and Philly. So I think over the next 3 or 4 games, now combine that with what you've already seen the last three, you may be able to get a feel for if you think he's going to be good enough to, you know, be a starter or backup, whatever, however, you know, it comes down to. But I think that's a good point, Kev.
I mean, maybe, you know, they're doing the right thing. He needs to be the starter no matter what. And we said this, you know, a week or two ago also. Yeah. We know what Tyrod Taylor is. We know Tyrod Taylor is a wonderful backup quarterback in the NFL. Let's see. Let's give Tommy DeVito the next 4 weeks. let's see him against, you know, a good, well, we think a good Philadelphia team. They haven't shown it the last 2 weeks. But a good Philadelphia team. Saints is going to be tough. They have a pretty good defense. I think the Giants can stay in that game, though, with their defense. You know, the Rams can be, who knows. But, you know, he's got some challenging games coming up now. Let's see what he can do. Darren, you made a brief mention to it. I was going to ask the two of you as my two closest Italian friends. What do you think, you know, how much of it were you, was it the stereotype? How much of, are you offended by any of this stuff? Or do you think that with the veto, with the hand gestures himself, with the family up there embracing and kissing the agent and all, are you embarrassed? Are you frustrated by it? Or do you feel like DeVito's playing so much into it that DeVito's bringing on himself?
To be perfectly honest, none of it bothers me. It's like somebody walks around and says, oh, you know, the Irish like to drink beer. Do you get offended when somebody says that, Kev? No, it's yeah, actually something that you embrace. The Italians embrace food, and we talk with our hands. These are not things that insult anybody, in my opinion. Listen, you know, that's the whole family thing. This is the most excitement one player has had since Jeremy Lin in this town, okay? Well, we had Lin Sanity. We haven't had a player have this kind of hype in such a short time since Lin, in my opinion. So, no, I don't think it's in any way offensive. I think it's just – I think they're having fun with this kid. He's got his moment in the sun. G, what do you think?
It doesn't bother me.
Okay. I didn't think it
would. It doesn't bother me at all. And honestly, my dislike for the Giants is overriding anything that's happening with DeVito anyway. But, yeah, the DeVito thing doesn't bother me at all, to be honest. So
yeah, you read some of the stuff on social media that people, you know, I think people are just too looking for anything to be offended by.
It's ridiculous. Italians are very proud of their heritage. We like everything about it. We like our food. We like the way we talk. We like the way we act. We like the way we, you know, nobody's really offended by that kind of stuff.
I mean, listen, if you're walking
somewhere and you're a religious guy and they call you a mob member, you might be insulted. Outside of that, most people don't really care.
Yep.
I mean, the other thing is, before the last 4 weeks, the Giants were 2-8. This is just a reason for them to get excited right now. They've won 3 in a row, you know, so I think that's part of this whole thing too, Kev.
And only a game out of the playoffs.
Yeah, but a game out of the playoffs, but they'd have to like skip over like 6 teams. I mean, you know.
Oh, half the conference is 6-7.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into it. We'll start with the AFC. We're going to do this based on where the playoff seedings would be right now. Baltimore is at 10-3 in the one slot. They beat the Rams 37-31 in a close game. It was won by a 76-yard overtime punt return. Lamar and Stafford both threw for 3 touchdowns, 859 yards of total offense in the game. Darren.
Well, Baltimore lost Hamilton, who has been probably their best defensive player most of the season, or amongst them. Roquan Smith is probably the best. But still, he's like the head of the defensive backfield. You know, they also – listen, they're the one seed in the AFC, and I don't know if anybody would sit there and be saying, oh, I'm afraid to go to Baltimore. Baltimore hasn't been that impressive. They escaped in this game. I mean, they went back and forth. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think the Rams are world beaters. You know, like I just said, I don't think that Baltimore scares anybody as the one seed. Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, they probably got away with the block in the back on the punt return.
Yeah, you know, it happens.
But, you know what, I'd rather see them not call it.
Yeah, sometimes you want to see that.
Yeah. If we're gonna go through all the bad calls in the NFL,
That's what I said. You know what? It was borderline. It's like don't let the guys play sometimes.
Well, last year when Cincinnati and Kansas City, you were jumping down the throat for the block in the back. Now look at you, Kev.
All right, in the 2 spot right now is Miami at 9-4. They lost to Tennessee 28-27. Levis rallied the Titans for 2 late touchdowns. Tyreek injured his ankle in the first. He came back in the third. Like Kev said, and I agree with it, he looked like a decoy in the fourth when he was even out there. Tennessee outgained Miami 403-366 yards of offense. They held him down. They kept Tua in check, who only threw for 240 yards. Darren?
Couple things on this, okay? First and foremost, this is what the Dolphins did offensively. You know, and without Hill most of the game. They had a defensive touchdown, a bad interception. Sealer picked it off, went in. They had a 7-yard touchdown drive and an 8-yard touchdown drive. They had a 59-yard drive for a field goal and a 60-yard drive for a field goal. Mike McDaniel, this whole freaking thing. If Tyreek Hill is not on the floor, if not on the field, I should say, this team is just adequate at best. I'm sorry. It's not a great offensive team. He's not a genius. He just happens to have a guy that can beat a double team anytime you want. And, you know, Waddle and Ashane was playing full speed. Mostert's out there. They had everybody else going except for Hill. And this team couldn't do a thing offensively against a 4-8 Tennessee Titan team that had been embarrassed in some games that they played. You know, the stat I saw, and I didn't check it to make sure it's right. This is the first team to lose with under 3 minutes left in regulation, up 14 in regulation ever. 17,651-0 teams were when they led by 14 and the game ended in regulation. Teams have lost in overtime, but no one had ever lost in regulation. And I hate the fact that the Titans went for two down 14, cutting it to 8. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world. I don't understand the love affair with the going for two, and we'll talk about that in another game later. I just don't get it. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. If it doesn't work, now you have to hit a two the next time down. I would have played – I would always sit there and say, I'll go for the two in the last play of the game if I want to play for the win right there. I wouldn't have done it the way they did it. It worked. So, you know, I guess I'm not allowed to criticize it, but I will.
Well, and let me show you something. He's really putting it up. You're allowed to criticize it. Just because it works doesn't mean it was the right call.
I thought it was horrible. Kev?
As the engineer, I understand what the numbers say. And I know the analytics, and I understand the numbers. I still hate it. I'm going to go – if I was the coach, I'm down 14. I'm going for the extra point every single time to cut it to 7. And then I take my – then I get a sense of how are we doing, how's the game, do I feel like I can get the extra point and win the game in overtime, or do I feel like, hey, we've got them on the ropes, let's go for two, let's try to win the game here. But I'd wait to make my decision at the end of the game. I don't want to be forced to go for two on my last drive just to tie it.
That's it. I agree with you, and that's the exact point. I don't want to be forced in the beginning. I don't want to miss it on the first try and be forced to do it the second time. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And Tua, again, when he doesn't have that security blanket, a Hill to throw to, he looks uncomfortable back there. I know the offensive line has injuries. So do the Jets. So do the Giants. So do a million other teams. You know, that's just the way I feel about it. I think that they're a little overblown.
The thing with Hill is that you know he's going to draw the double team. And they do a great job with the play calling, with getting him in motion, getting the defense to pay attention to him. You know, here comes Hill in motion. Here comes the defense looking that way with him. And all of a sudden they're running the play, you know, to Mostert the other way. You know, just that little split second that you're delaying the defense makes or breaks a play. And without Tyreek Hill, that offense, like you said, is a good offense.
Yeah. Yep. All right, in the 3 spot is Kansas City right now at 8-5. They lost to Buffalo 20-17. They had 360 – I'm sorry. Mahomes was 271 with one touchdown. Play of the game was a modified hook and ladder. By the way, they got called back on a penalty. It was Mahomes to Kelsey who threw it back to Kadarius Toney, but it was called off because he was out. He was offsides. And we had Mahomes going into crazy mode, yelling at the refs after the game. Darren?
Okay, well, first and foremost, it was actually a very good game in a lot of ways. Buffalo jumped out. Kansas City came back. You know, I thought that the field goal drive that Buffalo took the lead on, great play by Allen, falling out of bounds, completes the pass. I didn't think Murray had control. I wouldn't have given him the catch. My opinion, it was real close. I just don't think if you're running and nobody's touching you and you can't control the ball as you're switching from one hand to the other, you should get credit for the catch. That's just my opinion. But they gave him the catch, caught the ball. It was that close. He lined up offside, okay? We can say whatever we want. You see the ball. You see your foot. He lined up offside on the play. Now, people say, oh, he lined up offside the whole game. Tyreek lined up. Doesn't matter. He still lined up offside. There's no reason to do it. You see where the ball is, you know, and they say, oh, you know, we're supposed to be able to get the official is supposed to help us out. Why? They don't help the defensive player out when he lines up offside. Why help the offensive player out? Listen, you guys know I like the Chiefs. There was no reason for him to line up offside. It was the right call. They lost the game because the idiot lined up offside. The guy's a mess.
He's a freaking mess. And I just think Mahomes' outburst was much more about the frustration of his offensive team and his receivers never being able to get open or make a catch. Plus, they got robbed the week before on the Valdez-Scantling Hail Mary that he got mugged on that they didn't call. And they've had a couple of rough calls. And they always get calls, too. Don't get me wrong. The Chiefs' calls even out. What was that?
Jet game.
Yeah, they certainly got that call that day. No doubt about it. So they get their share of them. But He lined up offside. I don't understand what the dilemma is. I don't know what the debate is. It's still going on. We're 4 days later. People still talking about this crap. I don't get it, Kev.
Especially when you're a receiver, you look at the official. If you ask the official, oftentimes they will tell you.
Well, actually, apparently he pointed to the official. And they showed a video of it. But it still doesn't matter to me.
But
look at the ball. Look where your foot is. How hard is this?
What gets me more troublesome is offensive tackles. How far off the line of scrimmage can you be? I've seen far more offensive tackles, I feel like, offsides because they're back too far in the backfield.
Your helmet has to be equal with, basically the midsection of the center. That's as far as you're allowed back, which is like a yard and a half. The Chiefs guy was awful. Remember early in the season, they didn't call on game one, then they called it on for like three straight games, and then he finally figured it out. That's where we are now.
It's a combination of, like I said, the tackles, I think, trying to get that little extra half yard that they shouldn't have. And how many of them also you feel like beats that snap count by that much and gets off early too? And I'm not just talking to the Chiefs, I'm talking all over the NFL for
I feel like offensive tackles get away with pulling early a lot. I mean, in my opinion.
And I feel like a lot of that
get the same advantage of sitting there and jumping without going across the line, but making it look like there's a lot of stupid stuff that goes on.
Yep.
I like the one call. I forget which game was it. They actually called the defense for a delay of game because of the fake snap count. I forget which game it was because we watched so many. But it's about time,
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Sunday night, but I'm not sure if it was Philly Dallas. Now I'm trying to remember. It was a Sunday afternoon game. I just don't remember which one.
Yep.
But Jacksonville's in the four spot. They're 8-5. They lost to Cleveland 31-27. Cleveland, by the way, is in the fifth spot. They're also at 8-5. Trevor Lawrence was picked three times. Flacco threw for 311 and three. Njoku had a great game. He had six catches for 91 yards and two touchdowns. Jacksonville, because they're in the lead of their own little division there. They're in the four slot. Cleveland's in the five slot. Darren?
So here's an example of you're down 31-27 and you go for two. What are you doing? So now even if you recover the onside kick, you can't get the field goal doesn't give you the tie. They didn't get the onside kick or anything like that. But they cut it to 31-27 and went for two. What are you doing? God, whoever the analytical morons, mathematical geek nerds that are doing this crap, that hang out with Mike McDaniel on the weekend, should all be freaking fired. Kick your extra point. If you get the ball back, a field goal ties it up. Why do you have to try to win the game in regulation every single time when it puts you where you need a touchdown to win? It's just stupid. I just don't understand what they do on this. And by the way, if Lawrence really had a high ankle sprain, there's no way he would have been able to play in 1 week. That's an exaggerated sprain. I'm sorry. He wouldn't have been able to stand out there, plant, throw. There's no way. He might have had an ankle sprain, but it wasn't a high ankle sprain. That'll knock guys out 3-4 weeks. I think that's crap.
Well, when I saw that injury, I was shocked that he was playing last week. Or when I saw that play happen, I thought he was out.
Yeah, but
when
they say high ankle sprain, you never see a guy back in less than 3 weeks. That's a crock. That's an ankle sprain, not a high ankle sprain. Sorry. No way.
All right, in the sixth spot is Pittsburgh at 7-6. They lost to New England in a horrible game, 21-18 on Thursday night. Trubisky looked horrible. Zappe had a couple of touchdowns. They're in the sixth spot right now at 7-6. In the seventh spot is Indianapolis. They're at 7-6. They lost to Cincinnati 34-14. They were held to 46 yards of rushing. They had 14 yards through the second quarter. They had points and nothing thereafter. And Cincinnati is at 7-6 also. They're outside looking in at the moment. Browning had 275 with two touchdowns. Cincinnati had 385 yards of offense in that game. Darren?
Game was 14-all. They shut him out in the second half, but out 20-0. Browning's looking comfortable. The kid looks pretty good. I don't think you can really say much more than – the amount of starting quarterbacks in the NFL this year that have looked awful and the amount of backups that have come in and looked somewhat decent, except for obviously the Jets, is astounding. You know, I mean, Browning, I mean, not that Burrow looked bad. He was hurt early on, but man, I read an article, by the way, today where someone was like, oh, Burrow's a system guy and Browning stepped in. No, Burrow's special. Enough with the crap because Browning had a couple of good games. But Browning's earning himself a contract, and he's going to have a chance to start in this league. I actually think he, out of most of the backup quarterbacks I've seen, has a legitimate chance to start in this league.
Okay.
I don't know what you guys think.
You got two other teams at 7-6, Houston, which we talked about earlier, versus that they lost to the Jets. The other team at 7-6 is Denver. They beat the Chargers 24-7. Wilson had two touchdowns. Javonte Williams had a touchdown. Herbert left in the first half with a broken finger. He's done for the year. Denver had six sacks and two turnovers in this game. Darren?
Denver is one game behind the Chiefs. At the beginning of the season, we'll make fun of Sean Payton. And now he's – I mean, listen, they haven't put up great stats offensively. The defense has played well. And listen, this is the team that gave up 70 points earlier in the year to the Dolphins, and the Dolphins could have scored more. They were missing so many defensive starters in that game, it was ridiculous. But then when they've gotten healthy, they've turned it around a little bit. You know, the Orange Crush was back this weekend. They crushed the Chargers. And this is a team that, again, one game out of the one game behind the division that the Chiefs have owned for years.
And by the way, they have the Lions this week, mm-hmm. Denver, yeah. And then they have the Pats, the Chargers, and the Raiders. So they're gonna get some wins now down the stretch in these last four. All right,
I agree.
We're gonna move to the NFC. The one spot is now occupied by the San Francisco 49ers. They're at 10-3. They beat Seattle 28-16. Purdy had a great game, two touchdowns. McCaffrey ran for 145 yards. Debo had 149 yards. He also ran for a touchdown. Dallas is in the two spot. They're at 10-3 now after beating Philadelphia 33-13. Dak threw for 272-2. Aubrey, the field goal kicker, he had four field goals in the game. He's the first kicker with two field goals over 59 yards. He had a 59 and a 60-yarder. The win moves Philadelphia now down to the five spot. They had three fumbles in that game. They didn't have an offensive touchdown. Darren?
Well, the one thing I'll say, and I know at the end of the day, you look at the stats, Brown had a decent game. Gilmore was in his grill all day. Brown had drops. Brown had trouble getting open. Even when he made catches, they seemed really, really challenging for him. And A.J. Brown probably, to me, was the best receiver in the league behind Hill the entire season going into this game. And, you know, I think he made a comment about Stephon Gilmore being old, and I think Stephon Gilmore took a little umbrage with that, so to speak. Dallas is simply the better team right now, and I didn't think I was saying that going in. I thought Philly would find a way to keep it close. Philly's going to have to fix some things here. The one thing it tells you, though, is that the Giants are going to have to play Philly twice, like, and Philly's going to be playing twice probably. That's probably what we're looking at right now.
Yeah. Going back, you know passing A.J. Brown, who was so hot weeks ago, Debo Samuel now I think is probably about the hottest receiver in football. You know, another 150 yards of offense today. The touchdown, I mean, he just blew by Jamal Adams. That was a total mismatch.
Safety, he should be a little faster than Jamal. But the thing about it also is that there are so many weapons. I don't know how this team – well, they're able to stack it up because they have a seventh-round last pick of the draft quarterback that makes no money. So yeah. They have a premier running back. They have a premier receiver. They have a premier tight end. They have good backup running backs. They have, they have it all. And
a good second receiver.
Yeah, and a great left tackle. I mean, yeah, I mean, to be honest, Debo's really the second receiver. Ayuk is really the number one if you go through the whole season. I mean, not on the eye test, because when Debo gets it, he's electric. But Ayuk's having a great year. And best left tackle in the NFL most likely as well. This team is really just stacked.
How could a guy like Jennings be on all these other teams that he's buried as the third receiver and probably the fourth or fifth option on offense on that San Fran team?
He'd start for us, Kev. He'd start
yes,
for
he
us.
Yes, he would. Well,
he'd be our number two behind Garrett and a heartbeat. I know
that doesn't really take much.
That's how bad our starters are.
Yeah.
Detroit's the three at the moment at 9-4. They lost to Chicago 28-13. Goff, 161 yards, threw two interceptions. Detroit was held to 267 yards of offense. Justin Fields is playing well again, guys. Had a running touchdown, a passing touchdown. Jaquan Brisker in that game had 17 tackles for the Bears. Pretty awesome stat. They're at 9-4.
And if you're the Bears, you love to see Justin Fields playing well. It gives you the choice then of either you're looking to trade him, it builds up his trade value. And remember, they can win all they want because they're almost guaranteed not to have the number one pick.
Yep. So Carolina's pick.
So and they'll have another top 10 pick of the way it goes most likely, even if they keep winning. Most likely,
right around 10. But, you know, again, if Fields just plays lights out and you say, yeah, he's our guy going forward, now you've got a huge lottery pick there, a lottery ticket, and that number one pick overall.
I would take Justin Fields to be my quarterback all day if he was free for the job. I would take him on my team.
Yep.
Just because he gives you the added element. I don't think he's a great thrower of the ball, but I think he gives you the extra element. I don't think he's any worse than Lamar Jackson was at this stage of their career.
Agreed.
Okay. In the four spot is Tampa Bay at 6-7. They beat Atlanta 29-15. Mayfield had a couple of touchdowns. Rashad White had a great game. Otten had caught a touchdown with 31 seconds left to cap it off. They are the four seed at the moment, but they're in a three-way tie in the NFC South. Between them, the Falcons, and the Saints, they're all at 6-7. They're in the four slot right now.
How do you outgain a team 434 to 290, only to turn over the ball once, and still lose?
Still lose.
Well, here's how you do it, Kev. You give Bijan Robinson 10 carries. You know, you just basically don't use him. He had five catches as well. They don't utilize Pitts nearly enough on this team. And it's just Arthur Smith. I know Arthur Smith just makes mistake after mistake. Then they come down the field anyway. They get down to the 31. They throw a pass. It gets tackled at the 3. You got to get the ball in the end zone in the last play of the game. You can't just throw it short to London and hope he gets in. You got to get the ball into the end zone. It just made no sense. But they drove right back down. Ritter has moments where he looks okay, but most moments he doesn't look okay. And he does force that ball into London a lot, who makes a lot of plays. He's going to be he'll be a real good wide receiver once he gets a real quarterback in there.
Okay, in the sixth spot is Minnesota. They go to 7-6 after defeating the Raiders 3-0 in the lowest scoring game in the past 16 years. Listen, they went the whole game without scoring. It wasn't until under 2 minutes that they actually scored any point.
Joseph did miss a field goal, though. They could have been up 3 before that.
The offenses, total yards, Minnesota 231 and the Raiders 202. They combined for only 433 yards of offense, which in most of these games, that's what one team has. Darren?
You're not hearing much about Dobbs lately. And I was one that liked him. So I'm not going to say I wasn't wrong on him. He got pulled, and Mullins has already been named the starter for next week. He threw for 63 yards through three quarters and change. Two quarters and change. And then they brought Mullins in. 3-0. I mean, the Viking D is not very good. And they held you to 3-0. Then you sit there, you look at the Jets and say, what the hell? We couldn't get Aiden O'Connell off the field. Now he's coming back to earth. And by the way, in that helmet with that mustache, doesn't he look like Derek Carr a little bit when you first see him for a second? I always think Aiden O'Connell looks just like Derek Carr in that Raider helmet. But, yeah, I mean, you have Jacobs, Davante Adams, and you can't score. I mean, you know, it's pretty sad.
All right, in the seventh spot is Green Bay at 6-7. They lost to the Giants. We talked about that. On the outside at the moment are two other teams at 6-7. Seattle, who lost to San Francisco. We went through that. And the Rams at 6-7, who lost to Baltimore in an offensive shootout where they put up over 800 yards of offense, which is double the amount that was in that Minnesota Raider game. And that caps off week 14. Anything else you guys want to touch on? NFL.
A couple quick things. They've announced that there's going to be a game in Brazil next year. I don't get it. I don't understand the love affair with these foreign games. Why don't you play a game in Wichita? Let somebody come over from there. We'll go to Utah. Do something stupid. But no, we have to go to freaking Sao Paulo and watch some stupid game in Brazil. Al Michaels will not be doing a playoff game. 79 years old. I guess they've had enough of him. I don't know, whatever. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about Taylor Swift enough, whatever the story may be. But that he's gone. Belichick, the rumors are that he's done. This will be his last year. You know, and it's interesting that apparently Kraft made the decision after they lost to the Colts over in London, and or Germany, whatever game. I don't remember where they played it. And then the last one's Frank Wycheck passed away this week.
Yeah.
He actually fell in his house, banged his head, and died. He's like 52 years old. If you remember the Music City Miracle, he made the throw. I mean, Mason's going to get the credit for the touchdown, but he made the throw across the field. And it was a great H-back slash tight end for many years and helped revolutionize that position a little bit. This week, just as a highlight, every game except for the Thursday night game has a team with playoff implications. So the highlighted Thursday night game with Amazon, who's going to sit there and download something to watch the Raiders and the Chargers if you're not a Ranger Charger fan? Who is going to really care about this when you see Easton Stick take on Aiden O'Connell and what can only be a thriller? You know, but every other game has something. But the game of the week this week, guys, Dallas Buffalo is the one that stands out to me. And we have three Saturday games. So, Kev, Dallas Buffalo in Buffalo. Who do you think comes out of there as the winner this week? No spread. Just asking you who you think wins it.
Because you're playing. I was looking at this game. I knew we were going to ask a question. I keep going back and forth. You know, the fact that they're in Buffalo. But I don't think it's going to be – weather's going to be too bad. I think the Cowboys are playing so well. I think the Cowboys are going to go in there and win.
Okay. G, thoughts?
I think Buffalo winds up field goal game. Making this getting the win here, but this should be a good game. And if you told me it was Dallas winds up winning this by 14, I wouldn't be completely surprised. I do think Buffalo has a chance in this game. I like the way they got that win last week. Hopefully that gets them rolling a little bit. Darren, what do you think?
I like Buffalo. I mean, they're actually favored by two going into this game.
Yeah.
Which means a neutral field probably would have been a 1-point Dallas favorite. But I think that I think Buffalo is going to maybe out-physical them a little bit. I think the AFC is better than the NFC, even though the top of the divisions right now seem like the NFC. Seems like San Francisco is the best team in football to me, watching them week in, week out. If everybody's healthy and playing, they're better than Philly. They've proven it. I think they're better than Dallas. I think San Francisco is the team to beat here, but I think that Buffalo finds a way to win this game at home and really must win. Buffalo can't afford the trip up at all really here. So this is an important game for the Bills.
I would agree. And San Francisco was all three of our picks to get to the Super Bowl before the year started. No surprise that they have 10 wins already at this point. They already clinched a playoff berth, by the way. So,
and guys, the Bengals are still alive.
and you know,
we're going to make the playoffs. Now there's a shot. Anyway,
Brian is going to lead them to the promised land.
Based on how some of these teams in the AFC at the top are playing right now, something I had said a couple weeks ago, you know, if you're Buffalo and you sneak into that 7 seed, man, Miami, Kansas City, whoever winds up having to play them, that's going to be a hell of a that's a test nobody wants at that point. So
yeah,
the AFC wild card weekend, those three games, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5, are going to be excellent games. The NFC might lose a little something in the 4-5 because you have no faith in the South winner, but I think we theoretically we should have good games all the way around.
Yeah
I think, yeah. Cowboys or Eagles against that NFC South is just going to be on paper, a blowout.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's hard to imagine that Atlanta, Tampa Bay, or New Orleans is able to win that game. Sadly, I'd probably give New Orleans the best chance to keep it close, only because I think their defense is the best of the three.
And sadly, all with, right, you know, the 7 is Green Bay right now. I mean, they're under 500. You've got a whole bunch of under 500s battling for that last wild card spot. Hopefully somebody pulls up and gets over 500.
Yeah, I'd like to see Seattle get it. I don't know. I think that they play up the competition from time to time. I thought Drew Lock played well this week, by the way. You know, they were in that game. Then they got into Metcalf's head. He got into the fight with Warner at the end. A little bit of excitement there. But, you know, I think Pete Carroll always finds a way to get his team to be motivated for any big game. Just one man's take.
All right. We're gonna move to a little baseball news that's happened over the last week. A number of things actually occurred. Big one has to be Ohtani. It's 10 years, $70 million for $700. But there's a huge deferral in there. It comes down to being only $2 million a year. They're deferring $68 million a year. So from 2024 to 2033, it's $2 million a year. And then from 2034 to 2043, it's $68 million a year. There's no interest. But because of the cap hit, the Dodgers will actually be paying $46 million a year. There's no opt-outs. There's no options. There's no escape hatches on either side. It's pretty straight. Guys, what do you think of Ohtani?
Kev, go ahead.
I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked at the dollar value that came out. I mean, even if you look at the present day value of 461 with all the deferred money, I mean, it's still much more than we thought, than I thought. You know, this guy was going to be DHing. He's going to miss his entire year with Tommy John surgery. You don't know what he's going to do after coming back from his second TJ surgery. A lot of money for a DH.
What if I just tell you it's a business decision? I don't know what he's going to give me on the field, pitching or hitting, but you know what? It's going to cost me $700 million, but I'm going to wind up making $2.5 billion over that time frame because of all the overseas money I'm going to collect.
I mean, it's a strong Asian market out there in LA, which helps to pull in extra money, extra revenue, the merchandise sales. I mean, the Dodgers got to have all that extra money coming in.
I don't even think it has to do with the West Coast. I think it's the overseas market, to be honest.
He already set a record for jersey sales in 48 hours. I'm just saying. The thing is, it was his idea for the deferment. It wasn't even the Dodgers that pushed it. He came up with the plan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, that's what he wanted. I was stunned. $700 million is a lot of freaking money for a player. Yes, as a business decision, it makes sense. But if you spend $700 million, listen, this, we're talking baseball now, not business. If you're doing $700 million and you don't find a way to win with it, you know, if he doesn't win a championship for you at $700 million, you know, in New York, he'd get crucified. In L.A., he might survive. But in New York, you'd get crucified. In Philly, they'd probably shoot you. Boston, same thing. You know, it's a different market out there, but my goodness, I mean, they better hope that this DH does enough to help them win.
$700 million over 10 years, how many, not just one. If you were in New York, how many would you expect?
I expect three at least.
Yeah, right? Like you said, and, L.A. being a different market, he might be able to skate by. You know, Dodgers have to win one at least.
And that's the problem, though. Now the market next year for a Yankee fan looking at Soto, or anybody that's going to be free. Mets are going to be looking at Soto next year, too, and everybody else is. The money is going to go up. Now it's going to be minimum $500 million before we bat an eyelash, G. It's not going to be $400 million like Judge. It's going to be more.
Judge
it's
is the
a
market.
Lot of money. I mean, he's at a market that's going to scare the hell out of everybody. And the Giants apparently offer the same deal. Giants keep losing these superstars with the same deal. I feel bad for them. Even though they did go out and get Jung-Hoo Lee today, but yeah.
The one thing I'll tell you is I'm not sure. The market's definitely going to go up, obviously, but I don't know if it gets crazy like this deal. I think this may have been the one-off. It happens every once in a while where you get that one-off contract. This may be that one-off. But I'm just saying, Soto, I do agree with you. I mean, the numbers are definitely going to go up. Soto, absolutely. Soto, especially if he has a good year, man.
Soto hits 40 homers and he's 26.
It's five.
What?
It's 500. I agree.
I agree. But you might. But he's got Boris, who's going to sit there and make it a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, baseball is completely thrown off by this. And while we're on it, I guess what'd you think of the trade, Soto for and Grisham? You know, that was important as the Padres dying to get rid of payroll for King. It goes Shioka, Thorpe, Brito, and Vasquez. What'd you think, Jake?
Love it. Love it. Without a doubt. Any day of the week. None of those players at this moment are good enough to hold up that trade. Love it. Mm-hmm. Do it any day of the week. Do it twice on Saturday, three times on Sunday. I can't tell you enough about it. Put him in the middle of that lineup. Hopefully you keep Judge healthy all year to the point where we see what him and Soto do together for a whole season. But yeah, Darren, what do you think? You're the other Yankee fan.
I loved it too. I mean, listen, the best player in the deal was King, who's only got 2 years left of control anyway. I mean, the Padres aren't going to keep him after the 2 years anyway, most likely. You know, Thorpe is a nice player, but he's not an overpowering pitcher. He's his best pitcher is the changeup. So, you know, I don't think that they gave up anything that scared you. And I think that they got a great player. And that means that they have to make it a run this year, guys. That yep. means that they it's a one-year window because Uncle Steve's going to have out his checkbook next year. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers do again. There's going to be a lot of bidders on this. Even the Sox could, because he's an opposite field good. I know he's a lefty bat in Yankee Stadium, but his power's the other way in a lot of games. So, I mean, he's not bad against that left field porch either for Boston. So, a lot of people are going to be bidding for this guy next year, but I love the trade.
Okay. Any other baseball points you want to touch on?
Yeah, the biggest deal is the Yamamoto deal. I mean, this is the guy that is getting the real big bidding. We already knew that Soto was coming to the Yankees or was rumored to. You knew Ohtani wanted to stay in the West Coast, and it was probably the Dodgers. We've been saying that since last year, right? So Jung-Hoo Lee was a nice signing for the Giants. Apparently, I don't know how great Korean players have translated here. They haven't yet, but apparently this kid's a stud center fielder with a little bit of moxie, so we'll see what this numbers have seen him play, so whatever. You know, Lugo going to Kansas City was a nice thing, but Yamamoto is the guy that a lot of teams are in on. I think there's at least 10 teams in on Yamamoto. And it's, again, a guy that none of us have ever seen pitch. 25, loves the pinstripes. Then Uncle Stevie flew out there to see him. You know, the Dodgers have seen him. The Red Sox have seen him. The Giants have seen him. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the running for this. This is going to be the swing guy, because once he goes down, then we start to see Montgomery. And you know, we get the other pitchers all falling into place a little bit, but it really starts with Yamamoto. So I'm excited to see what happens to him. And his 45-day window, what has he got, another, like, 30 left maybe?
January 4th is the day.
January 4th, so a little over. So, yeah, so that's going to be
– hopefully he makes a decision sooner than later, I think, for everybody. Yeah,
no, we'd all like to know.
Everybody would like to know, and all the teams would like to know for sure what they need to do as a fallback option. You know, then you can see, you know, the Jordan Montgomerys and Ian Snell start to sign after Yamamoto. Well,
and right now the Mets are rumored to be the leader for Snell, from what I read. But let's see what happens. Well, you don't want another five-inning pitcher? Come on. And wait for his contract year. But he has his contract year. He's going to pitch great for you.
Two Cy Youngs, and in between has been not a very good pitcher.
Exactly.
Big rumors out there right now that the Dodgers are working on a trade with Tampa Bay for Glasnow, by the way.
And Margot. So
yeah.
Yep. Saw that too. Craziness. And how do you feel about the ball with Ronnie Mauricio?
Unfortunately, the team hurt. To me, you know, with the ball is far different than this stupid World Baseball Classic in the spring training. We've seen the Latin American players love to play in all their home countries, you know, down in the Caribbean, down in the Dominican, wherever they play for them. We've seen Arizona Fall League for, you know, just baseball in general. These young guys are still looking to develop, still looking, you know, for Mauricio playing a lot of third base, you know, still a developmental tool. And the fact that it's December and now you can spend the offseason going, okay, we've taken Mauricio out of the equation as a potential third base solution. You know, we weren't counting on Mauricio to be our all-star closer or necessarily guarantee that he was going to be key cog for the year. We were hoping that he would be able to take either third base job or an outfield job. Who knows where he fits best defensively if his bat translates to the major leagues. This was not a sure thing. So to me, upset to not have him part of the mix, but it's baseball, and you know, winter ball, you play, especially the young guys, they play.
I agree with you too.
I think all three of us are in agreement on that. If this is winter ball, it's a hell of a lot different than World Baseball Classic, which we have no respect for anyway. But anyway,
okay. We all want our players to play in winter ball and get better in the off season. Absolutely. You know, but we just do. Whenever we have a young player that's playing a winter ball, we want to see him play. You know, love playing baseball.
Okay.
Hey, this guy was the MVP of the Arizona Fall League. All right. Yeah.
I love that. I love that stuff.
All right, let's go around the other sports. Kev, want to start us off with something?
A little NCAA football. We had one game to talk about from last weekend, the Army-Navy game. Army pretty much dominated most of the game as much as you can dominate Army-Navy. They left 10-0 at halftime. It was 17-3 after the fumble return touchdown with 4:49 left. And especially Army-Navy, you're thinking, two touchdowns under 5 minutes, this game's over. Well, Navy put together a nice drive, got the touchdown, and another game where the coach goes for two.
Why?
Make it 17-10. Nah, let's keep it 17-9 so we have to go for two if we, by chance, somehow make a miracle and get another touchdown drive. Well, then the defense held them. They stuffed Army, and then they punted the ball away, and Navy put together another drive where I don't know what the hell the Army defense was doing. In a game where you're trying to keep players in bounds and wind the clock, they're giving up 12 to 15 yard cushions where Navy was saying, "Oh, are you going to give us a 10 yard out and get out of bounds on every play? Well, thank you very much." The defense, the Army defense, just played way too soft. Let Army drive down the field and then came down right to the very last play, fourth and goal, and Navy was stopped an inch short.
I would probably call it a couple of feet, but he was sure.
It was close, but it wasn't that. You couldn't tell for sure where the ball was.
The first review, you could tell he was short. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he was short by a lot, but you could tell on the first review he was short. I was stunned at the way Army played defense. They played prevent, and they almost prevented themselves from winning the game.
Yeah.
Always great to watch that game. Love watching it, and always love it when they sing second to the to Army. That's pretty much it.
They sang second, and because they beat Air Force earlier, big deal for the service academies, they win the Commander-in-Chief trophy.
No, absolutely.
Which is what they play for more than anything else.
Yeah, listen, you go 0-11 and beat Navy, and it's a great season. You go 0-11 and beat Army, it's a great season. That's the way these teams feel. Coaches get fired for losing even if they go like 9-2 because you can't lose to the other one. It's just the way it works. Yep, absolutely. The Navy last year lost too many games in a row to Army, and that was that.
Yep.
Anything else college football? You want to keep going with it, Kev? You have
Jaden Daniels Saturday night, then wins the Heisman Trophy, beats out Marvin Harrison, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix Jr. No surprise there, right, Darren?
No, I thought he was the winner. I thought Penix was close, but I thought he was the winner.
Yep. Now we get into the bowl games. First, let's talk a little football. The bowl games coming up. They start Saturday. Seven games on Saturday. Feels like New Year's Day. Dude, New Year's Day, we've got about five games. But the first Saturday of bowl season, we've got seven. It kicks off at 11 a.m. The Myrtle Beach Bowl, Georgia Southern versus Ohio. Our team, Appalachian State, they play the 3:30 game in the Avocados for Mexico Cura Bowl. They are going up against Miami of Ohio.
Avocados for Mexico!
Everybody's going to be tuned in to watch Appalachian State. Again, watch our Facebook. We're going to post the games. We're going to post our predictions for every game on Facebook. We're not going to waste time on our podcast picking all these games. We will pick them up as we get to the big games towards the end. Now, the big problem is bowl opt-outs. We already know for sure Drake May from North Carolina, Sam Hartman from Notre Dame, Caleb Williams from USC have all opted out of their bowl games to prepare for the NFL draft. More to come. And that's just the quarterbacks. Transfers. We know Riley Leonard is transferring from Duke to Notre Dame. A little lesser impact, but Brock Vandegrift, highly recruited by Georgia. He's been stuck in their depth chart. He's transferring to Kentucky. Other starters that are now in the transfer portal who will not be playing in their bowl games. Tyler Van Dyke from Miami. Dylan Gabriel from Oklahoma, who sounds like he's probably going towards Oregon.
He is going to Oregon. He already committed.
He did commit today?
Yeah.
Okay. Cam Ward from Houston. DJ Uiagalelei.
Cam Ward's Washington State.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Should I pronounce it right the first time? Uiagalelei from Oregon State. Dante Moore from UCLA. Kyler McCord from Ohio State. All the starting quarterbacks will not be playing the bowl game. Darren. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, so Gabriel's going to Oregon. Leonard goes to Notre Dame. Nebraska is getting McCord. Will Rogers from Mississippi State, who's not a household name, but he was played in that air raid. He's going up to Washington. Van Dyke is heading to Wisconsin. And there's so many other. This is just the quarterbacks. It's a joke. The transfer portal is getting to be out of hand. It's just now highest bidder now. Whoever's going to give me the most NIL money, and it's becoming rich teams and poor teams. It's like watching the EPL. You know, basically, yeah. Man City is going to win. Arsenal will be okay. Chelsea will be okay. Man United will still pay. And then, you know, if you happen to root for freaking Swansea, you have no shot of going anywhere. You know, that's kind of where it's going to come down to. So coaching is going to matter a lot less because you're going to sit there, take a kid, teach him how to play for 2 years, and he's going to end his career somewhere where he can win. And it's unfortunate. And two other quick things. Brendan Rice declares for the NBA draft NFL draft out of USC. And so now Gore's kid and Rice's kid are both going to be in the draft at the same time. I think that's pretty interesting.
And Harrison's kid.
What? And Harrison's kid. Absolutely. Harrison's kid was wow. A slam dunk. But you got three Hall of Famers. Their kids are coming out this year. Real quick, FCS. We got the Final Four also there with the playoff. You got South Dakota State hosting Albany, which is about 6 minutes from Kevin's house in Southern Canada. And then we have Montana. They're going to go up against, why am I blanking, North Dakota State, the perennial power. So going to be frigid cold weather in both places, particularly South Dakota. Last week it was 0 degrees. I don't know what it's going to be this week, but woo, it's going to be tough. But go Albany. Let's see what they can do. Hopefully they keep it competitive. And I know you want to touch on the D3 also, Kev.
In Division III, Cortland, SUNY Cortland is playing for the championship. Do you remember who they're playing against?
I don't remember.
Yeah, we're high quality podcasting here.
I totally forgot. I totally forgot to write it down. I'm sorry.
But, you know, I know for me, I'm in the Cornwall area, and we've got a couple of kids locally who are up in Cortland playing on the team. A couple of my son's friends are on the team, so you know, rooting for Cortland to win their Division III championship game this weekend, Friday night, actually.
Yeah, both games are Friday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time, so you know, you'll need two screens if you want to watch Albany and Cortland. Gino shakes his head.
Darren, where are you going next?
NBA. I hate the NBA, but I'm going to talk about it right now anyway.
North,
so the Lakers, well, you got something, Kev?
They're playing North Central.
North Central. Thank goodness.
How did you get that in there?
If we didn't know that. So the Lakers won this stupid in-season freaking tournament, and they're going to hang up a banner? You're not the Utah Jazz. You're not Oklahoma City or New Orleans or Memphis. You're the freaking Lakers. Behind the Celtics is the Lakers, the two most prominent teams in NBA history. And you're going to hang up a banner for something this crappy? UCLA doesn't even hang up Final Four banners because they only hang up championship games and that champions. And now you're going to sit there and tell me that the freaking Lakers are going to put a banner up for this stupid joke of a goddamn tournament? You got to be kidding me. They must be getting bribed to do it, because if somebody thought this was a great idea, they're freaking morons. Freaking morons. Sorry.
17-time NBA champion, I believe. And they're worried about
the Celtics. Only behind the Celtics.
And they're going to put a bad line for this joke of a tournament.
What did you say, Kevin? Jane, what did you say?
17-time world champions and one in-season tournament champion.
That's right.
Oh, it is the biggest joke ever.
Hey, LeBron's done something that Michael Jordan has never done. He's won an NBA Cup.
God. Enough of LeBron already.
And Anthony Davis deserved the MVP. Yeah, played LeBron in the final game.
You're right. Couple other quick things. So Detroit has lost 20 in a row now. San Antonio has lost 17 in a row now. The two highest paid coaches play coach San Antonio 1, Detroit 2. These teams are combined for 37 straight losses, and their coaches make a ton of money, $16 million and $13 million respectively. Kev?
The Pistons are up to 21. They did lose to Philly tonight.
I did not catch that. Sorry about that.
And let's see, is that game finally yet?
The Spurs were playing tonight. I didn't watch it.
Lakers and Spurs. Lakers are up 2 with 20 seconds left. So we'll have a final before we're done talking NBA here, I think.
You mean the in-season championship team is only up 2 over the whatever?
Well, you know, it's a come down from, you know, the high of the NBA in-season tournament and having to play the lowly San Antonio Spurs. You know, it's a little.
What a joke. I can't believe that they're hanging up a banner. And then the last thing, Draymond Green, again, punching somebody. it's suspended indefinitely now. Punch Nurkic, who said that brother needs some help, is the way he was quoted as saying it. I mean, there's something wrong with Draymond Green's been a nightmare since he entered the league. This guy would have been out of the league 5 years ago if he didn't play for Golden State, because his stats don't go on to him as a great player. He's a backup forward anywhere else with no offensive game, but because he's got guys that can shoot the lights out, he looks good. I've had enough of seeing this guy.
As I've seen somebody call him the Kane of the triple single.
Yeah, he's awful. And he's not a good guy.
No. I mean, I'm trying to sell the foul call because Jurkic was tugging my jersey a little bit. Come on. With that swing he took, it was ridiculous.
It's just not a good guy. It is always controversial. You know, listen, he's a smart guy. You hear him talk outside of the off the court. He knows what he's talking about. He's got anger problems on the court. I mean, listen, and we watch basketball at a physical time. In that time, he would have been just fine. He would have got eaten alive. I mean, Oakley would have wiped the floor with him, as would a bunch of other guys. You know, you wouldn't have tried that with the X-Man. You wouldn't have played that way. But in the patty cake league we have now, you can't do this crap anymore.
I mean, the bad boys would have just killed him. Lambeer would have clotheslined him.
Lambeer would have just wiped the floor with him. And Rick Mahorn would have scared the hell out of him.
He would have stood up to Mahorn and bowed right down.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I don't know. It's a patty cake league now. You're not allowed to touch anybody, but, you know, you're playing against European guys. You can't punch them. Anything else for NBA for you guys?
Well, a little bit of the Knicks. Okay. Just because they've got the key injury. So the Knicks right now, 13-9, sitting there in sixth place. They've beaten up the bad teams. They're 10-0 against teams under 500. So obviously 3-9 against teams over 500. So they're missing a superstar to compete with the top teams in the league. But right now they'll be out without Robinson for about 2 months probably. He had ankle surgery. What they're doing, at least at the beginning of the absence here, is they were going to be starting Jericho Sims at center and keeping Hartenstein with the second unit train, not to upset the balance there. You know, Robinson gives you the offensive rebounding. He leads the league in offensive rebounding, gives you some rim protection, all that. But if Sims can just do anywhere near that, they're not asking for a lot of points from the center position. They've made the other change. They have put DiVincenzo in the starting rotation and moved Grimes to the bench. But as far as either filling the gap with Robinson missing or looking for that other superstar, you know, you take a look. Knicks are in great position for trades. They've got depth. They've got expiring contracts. They've got 7 tradable ones in the next 7 years and 12 tradable twos. So they've got all the ammunition they need to make a trade if there's one that becomes available.
Yeah, they signed Taj Gibson today. So Jericho can't really do it. Taj has been around long enough where you can kind of plug him in. He's not going to hurt you if playing 10, 15 minutes a night if you need him to do that. And you're right about the fact that they just don't have the superstar. It's almost like the Nets play better against the better teams than the Knicks do, and the Nets don't have one either. It's kind of an interesting parallel the way they play. The Nets seem to play up and down a little bit worse than the Knicks do. The Knicks seem to beat the teams supposed to beat and struggle with the teams they're not. So that's really the big problem with them. And Grimes is bitching and moaning because he got put into the second unit and he's complaining.
But, you know, he went to the second unit. Last two games there, he scored 32 points. He scored 18 total the previous 7 games in the starting lineup. They had him.
I'm just saying he was whining about it. I agree with you.
And your point with the Nets. They're better than the Knicks. They are 5-8 against 500 teams and above. They're 7-2 against below 500. So they play a little bit more at the level of their competition.
The thing is that the Nets are fun to watch, when especially when Bridges is playing well.
Yeah.
Because when they have Bridges going and when they get Cam Thomas, you know, ready to roll again and stuff like that, they're going to have enough scoring to compete with people. But once again, they're much further away than the Knicks. The Knicks are going to have the opportunity to get a really nice player to come in here and join them.
The Nets are a lot younger team than the Knicks, obviously, and they're not as established. But, you know, you see the core, you see the promise of this team that, you know, when in another year or two, when they're ready to make that next jump up, do they have the assets to make their trade to get, you know, towards the upper part of the league?
Yeah, the funny thing was the Nets went from completely unlikable with the big three and a bunch of guys nobody liked to a really likable kind of squad of underdogs trying to make something happen. You know, just the way it works. And the Knicks are a very likable squad too, so it's a pretty cool, time to be in this area watching NBA ball.
Yep.
And that's it for NBA. G. All right. What do you want to bring up?
Let's go. Let's hit golf real quick. John Rahm signs with LIV. It's a huge deal. Listen, I have no problem with it. I just wish everybody would just be consistent and authentic with why they're doing this. You know, Rahm should just come out. You should just tell the truth and say, I turned down a lot of LIV money previously. The PGA Tour asked me to be loyal. Then they went behind my back and made a deal with everybody. And, you know, end the story. But everybody's got to come up with a different reason, some reason. But Rahm's deal is ridiculous. I mean, it's 300 plus
for 3 years.
For 3 years, it's crazy. But it's not just 300, Kev, because there are like $40 million bonuses all over the place. So it's crazy.
Yep.
Any comments on this, guys?
Well, the one thing I'll say is I think golf is starting to lose the everyman with all this money getting thrown around. I mean, listen, we always knew golfers made good money, but we didn't really. You saw the purses and stuff. You didn't see what everybody else did on the back end. I mean, you could look it up if you felt like it, but you didn't really do it that often unless you wanted to see how much did the guy make for 27th. Happy Gilmore taught us to do that, and that's what we do. But the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, the everyman is going to get tired of all this money going out to these golfers, I think. Listen, I'm going to watch it, but I'm not going to watch LIV. I can't keep up with it. It's a little too confusing for me to watch. It's not as – I like watching the guy play first shot, second shot, third shot, not just a bunch of people putting and driving. I need to see everything else. So, you know, I hate to see the sport weaken because we all love it. We're older. We're heavier. It's the sport we can play. you know, I mean, it's the one thing you can still somewhat competitively with each other, not with professional golfers. I just hate that it's become so money-driven now. It does bother me. It's like every other sport, though. You can't really blame the guys for taking what they can get.
All right, let's hit a little NHL next. Who wants to start? Yeah.
Go ahead, Kev. Lead the way.
I was going to say, the Blues fired Craig Berube.
Yep.
The latest coach fired. He took over the Blues in 2018 when they were in last place, 19 games into the season. And they were last in January in the Western Conference. He led them to the Stanley Cup Championship. Now here are 5 years later, the Blues are looking for the same type of turnaround here. They're not in last, but they are definitely out of the playoffs right now. So they're looking for a spark. Amazing to wake up, look at the Metropolitan Division standings. The last two, and they'll continue another morning, three straight mornings here. The Rangers have been great all year. We've talked about it a couple of times. They're leading. Second place in the division, the New York Islanders.
They just won tonight.
They just beat the Anaheim Ducks 4-3.
They blew a 2-0 lead. The Ducks came back up, went up 3-2, and then the Islanders scored too late, beat them 4-3.
The Islanders blew a lead. I'm shocked.
So they played Varlamov tonight.
So they've got points in 13 of their last 14 games. The offense, which was so invisible early in the year, they've scored 35 goals in the last 8 games. So they've picked it up offensively big time here. And the Devils are sitting there in 6th place. They're right there. I mean, it's real close between the Islanders in 2nd, Devils in 6th. You know, they're only separated by about 5 or 6 points. We expect that to be like that all year. It's just a matter of who gets hot at the end to claim the playoff spot.
Yeah, the Devils went cold when Hughes got hurt. And when Hughes came back, now they've won, I think, 7 of 8 because they won again tonight. Go ahead, KG. Go ahead.
No, Island is 7-1-2 in their last 10. I mean, that's how on fire they are. So,
They lost to the Sharks, which is the one that upsets you because that's the one they had a 2-goal lead in the third. They blew that game against the Sharks as well. But two other quick things on hockey. Number one, Rob Ray. He was announcing between the benches, takes a puck to the face, sitting there bleeding, continues to do the broadcast. Same guy that you really remember.
That's Rob Ray.
Fighting earlier on. Rob Ray would fight anybody at any time. Wasn't the biggest guy, but he fought everybody to come. And he wasn't like Matthew Barnaby little, but he'd go up against monsters. You see him, they stitched him up. He's standing there with like this big cut in the middle of his head. I couldn't help but laugh about that. The other thing I want to ask you guys, So Tavares hits the milestone at the Coliseum. The fans are all over him a little bit. You know, Biz, the broadcaster for the NHL, you know, Paul Bissonnette, rips the eye on the fans for acting that way toward Tavares, who was a good Islander, he says. And then, you know, what's this? Butch Goring comes back and goes after Bissonnette. How do you guys feel about the way the Islander fans treated Tavares? The Islander fans.
It's been that like that for 6 years since he deserted us.
Yep.
No, oh, I'm gonna resign here. I'm gonna give you a chance to resign. Don't trade me. And then he went and left for Toronto anyway. It's a business. It's what it is. You know what? You left. Fine. We're not gonna cheer you.
He was a good Islander until he wasn't.
Yep.
Exactly. I'm just figuring I'd ask you guys the question because it was kind of a controversial thing. Not as controversial as Kadarius Toney lining up offside this week, but it was up there. I just figured I'd ask you guys about that.
All right.
All I have left is a little college hoop. If you guys have time, it's up to you.
Yep. All right. It's in college, man.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's pretty wild all over the place. Before I get into the games, apparently Juwan Howard, and it hasn't been reported yet, I mean, confirmed yet. It's been reported. Allegedly assaulted one of his assistants and will probably be being let go by Michigan. This guy, if that's true, the amount of anger issues this guy has had over the last couple of years is mind-numbing. Juwan Howard had a good NBA career. I wouldn't call it great, but he was part of the Fab Five, was Michigan royalty, basically, on the basketball side of things. Just thought that was really, really strange. Couple of big games this past week. Marquette blew out number 8 Marquette blew out number 15 Texas. Marquette bouncing back from a loss earlier against Wisconsin. Number 17 Tennessee outlasted number 20 Illinois. And then the other ranked matchup, number 1 Arizona crushed number 23 Wisconsin, beat the crap out of them. So you know, those were like the three big superstar matchups of ranked teams. Purdue also played up in Toronto, where Edie is from. He had 35 points, leading them to come back against Alabama. A couple of upsets for the week real quick. Number 13, Colorado State lost at St. Mary's. Number 14, BYU lost at Utah. Number 7, Gonzaga lost at Washington. Number 15, Miami got blown out in Brooklyn against Colorado. And number 21, Texas A&M lost at home to Memphis. So there's been upsets all over the place. Mid-majors have been winning. Over high majors, there's been a lot of stuff going on. There are very few teams that look unscathed early on. We'll delve much more into college hoops as we get into the new year, but I just wanted to give you guys a quick upset on that. And yeah, we'll see what happens as we keep going on, but that's the story on NCAA hoops.
All right, we're gonna head over to NFL picks. Week 15 coming your way. Week 14, good for Darren at 3-0. Not good for Gino at 0-3, which means our overall score just can't seem to pick up any speed because 3-0 and 0-3 make us 500, which is a nothing.
What did Kev do?
Kev was 1-2. For
we
the
killed
year,
us, Kev. We could have been over 500.
The Jets showed up. Darren and Miami blew a 14-point lead.
For the year, Darren at 27-15, Kev at 20-22, Gino at a very unrespectable 14-28, which basically means I can flip a coin and be right more often than I am at the moment. Okay, Darren.
Gino, why don't you go? Gino, why don't you go first?
Nope, Darren, 3-0.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a couple that are going to be a little unorthodox this week.
Just want to tell you, before you start, I just want to tell you one thing. Kansas City, New England, the line on the game started at 9.5. It is now down to 7.5, and I can't figure it out, by the way, just a betting thing, which means for that line to be decreasing like that, there is just massive money coming in on the Patriots for that line to be decreasing. I don't get it.
I wonder if there's weather because I haven't looked.
Maybe. Okay, Darren, start us off.
I'm not touching that one. I like Detroit -4 against Denver to bounce back. Last spread I saw was 4. It started the week at 5.5. It's down to 4. I think Detroit, they've had a couple of tough weeks, but I think they bounce back at home and they find a way to beat Denver. Like you said, I think Denver rolls after this week, but I think they slip up here. I think that the Tommy DeVito trade ends. I like the Saints -6 against the Giants. I think that defense will give them a little bit of a hard time. I think that Allen will have some wrinkles for him. And I think that New Orleans will do just enough to get past the New York football Giants. We talked about this game earlier. I'm taking the Bills minus two. I think the Bills win this game by a touchdown. I'm going with Buffalo. I think that Dallas is due for a bit of a letdown after the emotional game against Philly, getting over the hump against a team that they never really beat. So I think that they'll have a slight letdown, even though they're playing against a really good team. So Lions minus four, Saints minus six, Bills minus two, all at home. Those are my picks.
Kev, you are up next, Kev.
I'm going against Aaron in one. I'm riding Tommy Cutlets. I think this defense by the Giants is going to be able to keep the Saints close enough. I mean, the Saints might win the game, but if anything, it's going to be by a field goal. I think the Giants do cover the 6 points. So I'm going with the Giants. My second game, another team that needs to bounce back. The Eagles are at the Seahawks. Tough place to play. Two teams really desperate for a win, but I think the Eagles are just a little bit more desperate, and they're only giving up 4 points. I'm going to take the Eagles on the road. And my third game, I just don't see Mullins on the road playing quarterback for the Vikings doing any good there. I think the Bengals laying only three at home. I'll take the Bengals and Ryan Jake Browning.
All right. Gino. My first game is I'm taking Atlanta minus the 2.5 against Carolina. Carolina's horrible. That's my only thing. The way Atlanta just does not want to play Bijan Robinson is annoying as hell, but I still say they're better than Carolina. Atlanta minus the 2.5 is my first pick. My second pick, I'm taking Baltimore in Jacksonville, minus 3.5. I think Baltimore's got something going here. Jacksonville, I'm not sure what they got going. Lawrence was good, not good. Good, not good. He was not good last week. I think that keeps up. And my third game, I'm going against my team. I'm taking the Rams minus 6.5 against Washington. The Rams are home. I think that's enough for them to win by at least a touchdown. I think another offensive explosion in that game. I think you're looking in a game in the 20s, 30s there. But I'm taking the Rams minus 6.5. So those are my three picks for week 15 of this NFL season. 3 weeks left after this week, guys. Unbelievable how quickly the season rolls.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody's still alive almost. You guys have any other comments before we wrap this show up?
The Spurs have extended it to 18 straight losses. They did both to the Lakers.
And just so everybody knows, in a 12-round shootout, longest since 2016, the Penguins have outlasted the Canadiens tonight in a 12-round shootout in overtime.
Oh, wow. The goalies almost.
Oh, God. That's more shots on the goal than the Flames getting. Whatever. Anyway. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, sometimes passionately, sometimes angrily, whatever it may be. But we love talking about it. We hope that you love listening to it. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. We post stuff on social media. Respond, share. Please share. Let it get out there as much as possible. Share the show. Tell us what you want to know a little bit more about. Tell us what sports we should be covering. Give us opinions on what we post. Everything else that we can do that make this a more listenable show for you guys. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.